Good morning. We'll call the June 11th, 2013 Cecil County Council meeting to order. Approval of the agenda. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President, and good morning. At this time, the agenda does not need to be amended.
Entertained a motion to approve the agenda.
You got it.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Wilson. Second, Mr. Phillips, to approve the agenda. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
We ask motion carried. We have the minutes of June 4th to review. Any questions, concerns, or changes? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore?
There is none, Mr. President.
Any correspondence from council?
I do have a letter from Mr. and Mrs. With John and Carol Kane about a neighborhood, a resident in the neighborhood, and they're asking about codes and that type of thing, and I would like to just pass it on, make sure it gets down to planning and zoning, so I'm sure they'll take care of it. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Anything else from council? Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Several items to cover this morning. The first one being recognition of county employee Ann Hobbs, the State of Delaware Wastewater Operator of the Year. We have a tribute for Ann, and I want to read into the record a little career history of Ann and her recent recognition. Ann has been employed by the county since October 1999. She's currently a wastewater operator for and a lab manager for the South Coastal Regional Wastewater Facility. She has earned her environmental degree from Delaware Tech and is pursuing her Master's of Business Administration in Environmental Stewardship from Wilmington University. In addition, she works part-time as an instructor at Dell Tech, where she is teaching the wastewater operators of tomorrow. Last month, Ann was honored with the Wastewater Operator of the Year Award from Delaware Tech Community College. The college selected her from a total of 9 nominees from throughout the state of Delaware. This award is handed out each year to those who exemplify the highest skill, discipline, and excellence in the profession. Ann is the 5th Sussex County employee to earn the award. We want to recognize Ann today on this prestigious award, and we have a tribute here, which I will read. Be it hereby known to all that the Sussex County Council commends Ann Hobbs, Sussex County Engineering Department, and the State of Delaware Wastewater Operator of the Year. Sussex County Council extends its congratulations on this honor and sincere appreciation for your dedication, technical excellence, and exemplary work ethic, and directs this tribute to be presented on the 11th day of June, 2013. Signed, Michael H. Vincent, President. Congratulations, Ann.
Move it on. She is.
Congratulations. Very proud of you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for working at Scruff.
Smile. Good?
Thank you.
Yeah, wait. Come on. I'm sure a couple more here. No, we're okay. If you'd like to say anything, you're welcome to have the microphone.
Thank you. It's been an honor to work for the county, and hopefully it'll be an honor for more time. Thank you.
The next item of business is a proclamation, and I believe we have some members of the Laurel High School girls softball team here. Now, we're going to read a proclamation recognizing their outstanding season and also their recent state championship.
Was it softball?
A proclamation to honor the Laurel High School girls softball team upon winning the 2013 D1AA championship. Whereas the Sussex County Council wishes to recognize the Laurel High School girls softball team for winning the D1AA title as the state champions for 2013. The Laurel High School girls softball team capped out an outstanding season, playing a perfect game against Polytech High School, winning by a score of 3-0 during the state championship game on Saturday, June 1, 2013, ending with a remarkable record of 19-2. The girls softball team accomplishment is the first state title for the Lady Bulldogs in the history of their softball program and elevates Laurel to its first statewide recognition in 22 years. The Laurel High School girls softball team played as a formidable opponent in facing teams throughout Sussex County, the state of Delaware, and Maryland during the 2013 season, displaying cooperation, consistency, and character above all. The Laurel High School girls softball team accomplishment is a source of tremendous pride for the Laurel School District community and all of Sussex County. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Sussex County Council commends the Laurel High School girls softball team upon winning 2013 D1AA championship title and proclaims Tuesday, June 11, 2013, as a day for all Sussex County residents to honor the team's remarkable achievement. Signed, Michael H. Vincent, President. Ladies, would you like to come on down for a picture? Congratulations.
To the right of Mr. Vincent, and some of you to stand to the left of Mr. Vincent. We'll
figure it out.
Yeah.
Coach, why don't you come on down?
Yeah, come on down here. All right, raise your sakes.
Wherever you want to.
Squeeze it a little tighter. And
here,
maybe you come
turn sideways or something here.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
In the two. Maybe the taller one.
Is everyone?
That's cool.
You're good.
I think
you're
yeah, two.
Oh. Okay. It's your record. Here's somewhere we'll see everybody. That's all.
Well, the, one of the twos is.
We can try that.
That's successful.
Yeah, we can do that. All right. Coaches may be on either side.
Wait,
that's
just you and your opinion. Oh, I guess I should have been down there.
What we're going to do here, girls, if you want to hold this in front of me right there.
These girls played in the.
How's this look? This is definitely a thorn among a lot of roses. I know that.
Could that be Senator Vincent?
Well, I could go down and help
see
you.
Anybody?
Yeah. All right.
Right, Vince. Was that? He said a thorn among roses. I said, I could go down and help
you. Hold on here.
Now you could stand behind them, Vince. They'd still see you.
They would.
That better.
Vance? Mm-hmm. I call him Vance. Michael.
Oh.
Mike, you can stand behind them. They'd still see you.
All right. I'll let you double check.
You don't have to worry about being seen in the crowd, do they?
While we're waiting, I want to say,
they good? Girls, thank you very much for getting up early and coming in here.
Thank you.
How many of you were on the team here to go win the World Series? Wow. Quite a bunch of softball players in the Laurel, I'm telling you right now.
Can you take this so we can
get yours. Thank you very much for coming.
Mike, which one was a pitcher?
Congratulations.
I'll be that one. I'll be the one asked since you was on.
Mike, I mentioned to them that in the future, they might think about the fact that government could use a little bit more diversity, certainly more women.
Okay.
Oh.
You
thank
the
you.
Thank
you.
Right there.
Next item of business is appointments that the County Council needs to consider today. We have a number of appointments for boards and commissions that you have members that serve on. The first two for consideration are the Board of Adjustment, and Mr. Jeffrey Hudson and Mr. Dale Calloway are up for reappointment. That would be Mr. Jeffrey Hudson, District 5, Mr. Phillips, and Dale Calloway, District 3, Mrs. Deaver. They would be for an appointment of 3 years effective June 2013.
And I'd like to move that we approve Mr. Hudson for that appointment of mine.
Have a motion, Mr. Phillips.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
I'd like to move that Emery Rice be reappointed and Dale Calloway be reappointed. I checked and they both get A's on their work. They should be reappointed.
Well, right now we'll just deal with Mr.
Calloway.
Okay. Have a motion, Calloway. Mrs. Deaver. Second.
Emery West
and Dale. Reappoint Dale Calloway to Board of Adjustment, right?
Yes.
Board of Adjustment.
And Calloway to the Library Board. I mean, West to the Library Board.
Well, we'll just do the Board of Adjustment right now. Let me do
one at
a time.
Yeah. All right, let's do that.
Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Okay, and we also have for Councilwoman Deaver, District 3, on the Library Advisory Board, Mr. Emery West. This is for a 3-year term effective June 1, 2013 to expire June 30, 2016.
Yes, I would make that motion, and as I said, he's done a good job and should be reappointed.
I have a motion, Mrs. Deaver. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you. And finally, for Planning and Zoning Commission, District 1, Councilman Vincent, this would be for the reappointment of Robert C. Wheatley as Planning and Zoning Commissioner, effective June 1, 2013, for a term of 3 years.
Someone make that motion, please.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Phillips. Second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions on the motion?
Well, does he have any experience? Enough experience.
I hope so.
Okay.
Just
we'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Okay. Thank you. That concludes the appointments. The next item is a discussion and possible introduction of an ordinance pertaining to lot maintenance. this issue regarding the growth of grass and weeds has come up before council recently, and we have we had a previous ordinance that was introduced, and Mr. Robertson is here to discuss what took place and why we are now going to introduce another ordinance under Chapter 80. But prior to that, we're joined by Mr. Parker and Mr. Holloway. Eddie, would you come forward and discuss what you have experienced and what the courts are asking the county to do in regards to lot maintenance?
Well, originally, lot maintenance was a part of the zoning ordinance, and it was moved to Chapter 80. And when Chapter 80 was amended, there were some sections removed that we didn't realize at the time included the penalties for lot maintenance. So what's happened is recently we've had folks taken to court for violations, and the judges don't have penalties to impose. So it was brought to our attention that we need to do something to rectify that if we're going to have any teeth in the ordinance. Mm-hmm. So that's what this process is about today. It's
okay.
And that's it? No other changes?
And so you want to come forward and just give a brief update on what happened at Planning and Zoning before this gets introduced?
Certainly. Basically, at Planning and Zoning, there was just some questions about the ordinance and why it should be put into Chapter 115, which is the way it was originally proposed, because it was already in Chapter 80, and we actually had somebody come up and speak about it, that it sort of created an additional level of bureaucracy or path that you had to follow. The constables, as Mr. Lang sort of explained it, would recognize that there was maybe a lot that needed some maintenance on it, would have to go to Mr. Lang, who would then have to say to the constables to go back out and take care of the enforcement. This just keeps it all in one place in Chapter 80 and streamlines it with the constable's office.
Which is where it was apparently before.
Yeah, there was kind of a question as to, why are we moving it to 115 when we just put penalties back in Chapter 80. That was the commission's sort of basic thought on it.
Thank you, sir.
There were some other issues, but that was the main thing, just streamlining it.
Sure. Well, weren't we also looking at maintenance of the lots?
That's what this ordinance is.
Right, but I had a question about that.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
Question was, what about ornamental grasses and, for instance, native flowers? People have been encouraged to have rain gardens, and these grasses and flowers get quite high, quite tall. I'm just wondering do we need to think about that, because people are using them, doing these things. So.
Well, and probably that's something more for the public hearing if it gets mm-hmm. introduced, but I will say that the draft that's circulated does say that weeds don't include ornamental grasses, shrubs, or trees.
So okay.
That's
well, that's good. Yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm. Right.
And I guess it would be pretty obvious if somebody had their entire parcel as a rain garden versus a designated area, right? I mean, that's another way I would think.
So it would include flowers as well?
Yeah. The way it's worded, and again, we can get into more of this at the hearing stage, but it talks about grasses more than 12 inches high or ones that are unsightly and detrimental to the use and value of adjoining properties. And then it calls out again as an exception, ornamental grasses, shrubs, and trees.
Right.
Okay. Is this the type of ordinance that will get a recommendation from P&Z?
No, this one actually, because it's in Chapter 8, it just stays at the council level. Because when it was in 115, that's a land use ordinance, so that required it to go to P&Z. But really, that wasn't planning and zoning's consideration in it. They just sort of thought, well, why isn't it staying in Chapter 80 when it was there in the first place?
If P&Z were to make a recommendation from what you heard the other night, it wasn't totally on the positive side, was it?
Well, like I said, there was I think all five commissioners had five different things to say. The overriding concern that sort of everything fell under was there was an issue with how it appeared on the agenda. One of the code sections had a typo in it, I think, as far as numbering the code section. So that sort of was the overreaching concern about it. Beyond that, there was discussions about whether it's appropriate to have, you know, an ordinance like this, whether it's something that's, you know, more for the towns and HOAs. That was one issue. As I said, there was a concern. Back over here. There was a concern stated by commissioners and somebody in the audience about why are we making this a P&Z issue when it really should just stay with the constable's office. You know, sort of the extra level, as I said, of you know, administration on it. So there were a lot of different things, you know, that sort of fell under there. And then along that same line is just instead of reinventing the wheel, why don't we just add penalties to Chapter 80 where it was in the first place?
Was there any votes held P&Z on this?
No, there was. There was a recommendation for denial, as I recall, with all those issues listed underneath the primary one, that there was an issue about how it was advertised.
What was that vote? 3-2?
Mr. Phillips, off the top of my head, without looking at the minutes, I don't recall. So, there was a recommendation for denial, though. But like I said, if you listen to each commissioner, I think each commissioner had a, you know, again, underneath the advertisement issue, a different reason for doing it. So,
thank you, sir. Anything else? If you would read a short title, Mr. Moore.
Sure. An ordinance to delete the current Chapter 80 of the Code of Sussex County relating to lot maintenance and adopt a more comprehensive new Chapter 80 pertaining to prohibited growth of grass and weeds together with enforcement and penalty provisions.
You're looking for an introduction?
Sure.
Yes. I'll introduce it.
Ms. Deaver, introduce it. Next, Mr. Walton.
Okay, finally, thank you for bearing with us. Administrator's report. Per the attached letter, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, will host a public workshop on June 19th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. in the council chambers here in Georgetown. Purpose of the workshop is to discuss and receive feedback on FEMA's new Digital Flood Insurance Rate Map, or FIRM, and Flood Insurance Study, FIS. Copies of the map will be available for the public to review and comment, and representatives from FEMA will be available for questions. All right, I'll keep going. I don't know what's going on with our audio. Attached, please find the call statistics for fire and ambulance.
They're trying to fix it right now, sir.
Go ahead, try now.
Move down closer, sir.
Attached, okay. Attached, please find the call statistics for fire and ambulance call board for May 2013. There were 14,813 total calls handled in the month of May. Of those 911 calls, 77% were made from wireless phones. And finally, it is with sadness that we inform you that Neva West, county pensioner, passed away on May 31st, 2013. Ms. West worked for Sussex County from September 1971 until her retirement in March 1993. She retired from Scruff, where she worked as a clerk for supervisor. We'd like to express our condolences to the West family. Thank you, Mr. President.
Sure.
I have a question for the administrator. Well, on that FEMA meeting, will you be going to that and let us know what was said, and we could get a report on that? Or
yes, I plan to attend. Uh-huh. Jeff Shockley, myself, Lawrence Lank. It's held here, so we will be here to hear what FEMA has to say. Yes.
So you'll let us know.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mrs. Jennings, pension update and recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. I will be updating the council on the county's pension and OPEB plans, and will make one recommendation to strengthen our OPEB plan. The summary of the pension investment is as follows. The market value is at $62,200,000 as of March 31st, 2013. We had a one-year return of $4.3 million, or 9.3% net of our investment fees. We still have strong returns with a good downside protection. Out of the 30 clients that Pierce Parks manage, we are still the most conservatively strategized budget, or the plan. We are ranked 24% nationally among all plans of all sizes. All managers except Fidelity outperformed their benchmark for the first quarter. There are no recommended changes for this plan. Our overall risk versus reward remains very good. The summary of our OPEB, or our pension benefit plan, the market value is at $27,600,000 as of March 31st. We had a one-year return of $1.8 million, or 7.1% net of investment fees. Our fund is still ranked above average nationally. Our OPEB plan has made progress over the last year. However, we still want some improvements. So the recommendation of the pension committee is to reallocate the OPEB funds to the current investment managers, but in the areas that the managers are performing the strongest. The reallocation was attached. The rationale for the recommendations are as follows. We're going to rebalance the fixed income back to the policy target of 35%, convert the Harding-Loeber Global Equity Investment to the Harding-Loeber International Equity Investment because Harding-Loeber International Strategy was posted strong returns. We want to add funds to the Russell 1000 Index and the Vanguard Dividend Growth Portfolios to meet the domestic equity targets of 48%. And this will save an estimate of $14,000 annually in investment fees. Thank you, Mr. President.
Any questions of council?
Is everybody still on the committee? No, nobody's resigned. You still got everybody?
Yeah, everybody. I replaced Mrs. Webb, but other than that, everybody's the same.
Thank you very much.
You have a motion, Mr. Jennings?
I do. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve the Pension Committee's recommendation to reallocate the OPEB fund mixes to the following. BlackRock Equity Dividend, 4%. Vanguard Dividend Growth, 6%. Vanguard Russell 1000 Index, 24%. Vanguard Mid-Cap Index, 5%. Ridgewater Small Cap Value, 5%. Dodge & Cox Global, 8%. Wilmington Trust Fixed Income, 35%. Harding & Loeber International Equity, 8%. And our cash and cash equivalents, 5%.
Entertain a motion. Motion, Mr. Phillips.
Second,
Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
How about yes, motion carried.
Thank you,
Mrs. Jennings. Thank your committee. Hal Godwin.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. I have one wastewater agreement this morning for your consideration. That is Sussex Project number 81-04, Millville by the Sea, subphase 2C-2. Agreement number 856-2. In this case, the developer is Mr. Chuck Ellison of Millville, Delaware, and the location of this project will be the corner of Roxana and Burbage Roads in Frankfort. It will become part of the Millville expansion of the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District, serving a master planned community, and will receive a system connection charges totaling $18,492. We do have approvals from both our engineering department as well as DENREC, and we're expecting 35 days of construction with a construction administration and construction inspection cost totaling $11,022.90, with a proposed construction cost of $73,486.
Motion, sir?
I do. Be it moved that based upon the recommendation of Sussex County Engineering Department for the Sussex County Project number 81-04, Agreement number 856-2, that the Sussex County Council execute a construction administration and construction inspection agreement between Sussex County Council and Miller and Smith for wastewater facilities to be constructed in Millville by the Sea, subphase 2C2, located in the Millville expansion of the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District.
Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
How about yes? Motion carried. Next, sir?
Yes, sir. I have an update for you on the legislative processes in Dover that we're watching carefully. I'm pleased to report to you that today there are two bills that we're interested in. The first one is House Bill 27, which is our tax interceptor bill. It has made the agenda today. I'm not sure that it'll be worked, but it is on the agenda for the House of Representatives to consider. I will be there to answer any questions if they have them. House Bill number 63, which is a constitutional amendment allowing farmers the right to engage in farming, is on the House ready list. It has not made the agenda yet, but it is on the ready list. Senate Bill 58 is also on the Senate's ready list, clearing the Senate Finance Committee last week. Also, tomorrow in committee, House Bill 150, the raw milk bill that we discussed last week, will be reviewed by the Agricultural Committee in the House tomorrow at 1 p.m. Wanted you to know about that. I plan on attending that, but I don't have any communication from you about that bill, so I'll remain silent.
Has the Health Department shown any interest in it?
Excuse me?
Health Department.
Yes, they have quite an interest in that.
Okay. Sure.
They'll be there, I'm sure. Excuse me?
Health Department is opposed.
I don't know that they're opposed. I know they're concerned about the licensing prompt process. They want to make sure that, of course, there is no contaminated milk sold while it's not pasteurized. So I'm sure they have some health concerns that they want to address in the permitting process.
Does that mean that milk that's not been pasteurized is contaminated?
No.
No, sir, it does not mean that.
I think that's the phrase you just used.
They
want to make sure there was no contaminated milk sold while this is being passed.
Sorry.
Okay.
House Bill 74 has not moved. That's the health care bill that we talked about some weeks ago. House Bill 95, which is a environmental bill, it's on the House ready list. It's not made the House agenda. It hasn't moved since we spoke last. A bill that you might want to look at a little more closely, House Bill 135, is a bill that would entitle Sussex County to another casino. This bill will be discussed tomorrow in the Gaming and Paramutuals Committee. That hearing is at 1 p.m. tomorrow in the House Majority Caucus Room, if you have an interest in that.
Are we taking a position on that?
No one has given me a position, sir.
We voted, what, a year or 2 years ago?
Well, we can do it again. I would move that we go on record as opposing HB 135. Mr. President, if it's appropriate, I'd like to make a motion that we oppose House Bill 135.
I'll second it.
I have a motion and a second to oppose House Bill 135. Any questions on that motion?
Yeah, quickly, tell. I was reading something else. What is 135?
Don't we have
what's it about?
An ordinance?
It's about
another
casino
in
Sussex County.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't mind riding at Harrington. Let's say no.
Don't we have a motion? Didn't we have an ordinance that we didn't want any new casinos?
I mean, I think that
there was an ordinance concerning the land use aspect of it.
Uh-huh.
It did not go into not permitting them, because if the state permitted them, we would have to, but it was concerning the land use, concerning the size of any facilities, where they could go, those type issues.
Right. We addressed it through a zoning issue, and not as a, because gambling is a permitted activity in the state of Delaware, so we want to stay out of that, so we want to address it through zoning. And did we come up with anything? I
thought
forgot.
That was still permitted
in the state of Delaware as long as they get their cut.
But what does matter? It's a permitted activity in the state of Delaware. It's a legal activity in the state of Delaware. Anyway, did we do anything?
I can't recall. I know we had several different proposals and ordinances that we had, and my recollection is we even had a public hearing. I'm not sure that there was any action taken on the final.
I think we required size and looked at different things.
That's
right?
Correct. We can go back and check that.
We need to research that before we oppose, because it's hard for us to just oppose casinos. We're going to address it through zoning.
No, we got a motion.
There is a motion.
Any more questions on a motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
I'm going to vote against it because I don't want to turn down new business. I personally do not like any kind of gambling, but it's all over the state. We have it now, and if Sussex County can have a new facility and bring jobs, that's fine with me, so I say no.
Mr. Cole.
This is the vote is to oppose.
Oppose House Bill 135.
Which basically wants.
Wants to bring casino to Sussex County.
Wants to bring a casino to, like, as if we really need one. Mm-hmm. I'll just abstain. I'm kind of leaning towards what Joan says. I don't see it as an issue of the activity, but I think we need to address it through zonings very strongly.
Mr. Phillips.
I'll vote yes. From an economic development perspective, it's one of the worst things we can do. To have any dependence on gaming revenue into our budgets is foolish. When you look at the way the industry is going nationwide, for us to go down this path would be a terrible mistake.
Mr. Wilson?
I vote yes. I'm opposed to it for the simple reason that I was up to the shareholders meeting in Harrington yesterday, and it was hurting for business. And so by hurting Harrington, we'll turn around and give them less money there, which is for the state. It's going to turn around, I think, hurt Sussex County. We don't need it. We're not in need of it. Not now, anyway.
I'll vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Yeah, I only have next, one final comment.
Mr. Cole.
Following up on what Sam just said, that putting a casino in Sussex County, you have them now at the Ocean Downs location in Berlin, Maryland, and you have something in Harrington. Put another one here would just dilute Harrington's revenues and stuff and actually hurt. So in other words, it doesn't make sense to encourage a bunch of casinos that are half full. It probably is better to have a smaller number that are doing, you know, good business, which means revenues to wherever they go. So I would oppose it on those grounds.
So are you changing your vote?
No, I just still abstain. It's a funny issue right now. I don't know.
Sir.
Next, sir.
Thank you for the direction.
Yeah.
House Bill 137 is the next on our list. This bill tends to realign features for retirees in how they may provide benefits for their survivors. We've discussed this briefly. Gina has taken a look at it, and it is currently assigned to the Senate Finance Committee but not scheduled for a hearing yet. Senate Bill 78 has passed the Senate. It had an amendment added to it. This is a Wetlands Advisory Committee bill. It intends to establish a committee to study the reclamation of wetlands, and there's been one amendment offered to this bill which adds some more members to the committee from the Senate and the House and representatives from the Delaware League of Local Governments.
So it's an inventory, really, isn't it, at this point?
Yes, it's intended to analyze the wetlands and come up with recommendations as to how we might reclaim some wetlands that maybe have been lost. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make you aware of a couple other new items.
Before you go ahead, Father, how are they lost? How's these wetlands
lost? I don't know. I'm just was referring to
they're
that.
Reclaiming. From the bill. I mean, if somebody's been farming them, they want to go back and put them in wetlands, or what is it?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've lost hundreds and hundreds of acres of wetland.
And
there's studies that
you have a couple acres in mind that you got in mind that's been lost, so you can tell me what I'm talking.
I will check. I will get the study and I will bring it back.
Well,
so you can read it.
Well, Sam, there's no question.
I assume you're saying 100 acres. I figure you had a couple in mind.
Sam, we shouldn't be arguing. There's been a tremendous.
I don't want to argue about it. I want to know.
I know you.
I look, wetlands, I've known some farmers getting in some serious trouble with this wetlands people. They pushed extra timber, went on and put the irrigation so it go all the way around. First thing you know, they're being sued for damaging wetlands. And they were not really wetlands, in my opinion. Their opinion was. It comes down to opinions. What is wetlands? So I want to know what the wetland problem is. I want to know if it's farmland, they want to go back and reclaim. Which direction are they going here?
I can't answer that for you, Mr. Wilson. The number is Senate Bill 78, perhaps in the body of the bill, which I don't have in front of me, but I just have the amendment. There may be some clearer definition as to how they'll evaluate what lands are wet and what lands are not. I don't have that with me.
And it may be that farms are treated differently.
Well, you're allowed to farm. There's no restriction against agricultural use
but
in
there
wetlands.
There is.
You can timber wetlands. You can do all that in the wetlands. You just can't fill them. Mm-hmm.
The legislation establishes the wetland.
George, you're a little behind date.
You bring us the farm.
Mr. Godwin, I don't think we have the amended part of that, but we do have a copy of Senate Bill 78.
Yeah, the amendment basically adds some new members to the committee.
So we have in our iPad, we have a copy of House of Senate Bill 78. If you want to mm-hmm. check with you,
okay. Where is that right now? Currently,
it's passed the Senate with the amendment, and it's in a House committee, but it has not yet been scheduled for a hearing. The legislation establishes a wetlands advisory committee.
That's all,
Mr. Wilson. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that the bill has a lot of technical definition in it, but rather the advisory committee will define the questions that you were asking. The committee to develop comprehensive recommendations for conserving and restoring non-tidal wetlands in Delaware is the mission of the legislation. So the details of how we would apprise properties as wetland or not, I would imagine would come from some directive from this advisory committee, of which the amendment adds one representative from the League of Local Governments for each county.
The word restoring in there is kind of a little scary.
Mm-hmm. It also adds two members from the Senate, one from each party, and two members from the House, one of each party, and one representative of the Department of Ag Farm Service Agency appointed by the state executive director. So the amendment adds those new members to this advisory committee.
That's good. If I understand, then somebody will be representing Sussex on that committee.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And that would be a council person, or are we?
It'd be somebody appointed by the League of Local Governments.
By the League of Local Governments.
Others. There's also another one.
Just a citizen?
Right. I think there's another one appointed by the council in the original body of the bill.
I don't want the PGA there representing us. I don't want that.
Did somebody say they were?
It's an appointment. Evidently, you can appoint any
citizen. I would need to find for you in the bill who makes the appointment from the county.
I'm
then
very
that would
interested.
Help you understand that.
Yes.
Well, it's number 13 on the list, I believe. It says one representative of each of the three county government planning agencies as an employee of these agencies. So it would be somebody like a Lawrence Lank or a Shane Abbott.
Mm-hmm. And if we had a planner, we could send that to that person.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to also bring your attention to something new. Senate Resolution number 8 that was just introduced in our Senate. This is again, it's a resolution. It's not a formal action. It urges the United States Congress to support House Resolution number 129 in Congress. And this action in Congress was brought forth by Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur. And her ambition here is to reestablish certain banking regulations that have been removed, I believe, in 1999. Known as the Return to Prudent Banking Act of 2013, and revising the separation between commercial banking and the securities business in the manner provided in the Glass-Steagall Act. Mm-hmm. This is a federal action that our state Senate is asking for support in making this resolution to Congress, hoping that they'll re-energize this banking regulation that was dismissed in 1999. They claim that it was partially responsible for the banking collapse
mm-hmm.
that we went through.
So they are for it and they want some
Yes, they
support.
Simply want mm-hmm. other local governments and the state folks to weigh in positively is what they're looking for. But I haven't offered any opinion because you haven't given me one. Okay, another bill that I'd like to bring to your attention, it's actually number 2 on the House agenda today. It was just introduced a week ago, and it was been through committee already. This is House Bill 160. This is known as the Aquaculture Bill. This bill is rather lengthy. You've just received copies of it this morning. This will establish aquaculture, which would be the farming of shellfish in our inland bays. It appears that the energy behind this bill is to establish this as an economic engine, whereby currently we're the only state on the East Coast that does not allow aquaculture, which is the farming of oysters and clams primarily, but it would have leased areas where a business person would lease a particular section of the bay and then farm that area for aquaculture. This bill is moving quickly, has a lot of favor behind it. I wanted to just know whether or not you had taken a look at it yet, and whether or not you'd like me to offer any opinions from you on this piece of legislation.
The only concern would be is if they started leasing out parcels And, you know, there is a lot of bayfront development, and they, you know, have areas in front of these developments, and the people then are restricted to go into those areas. And, you know, because it is public waters. So you might, that would be the sensitive area where you're going to have somebody, you know, property owners.
Right. Well, George, this is known as economic development. Now, if we think this is being a little tough, let's look at the piping clover. And they got some skinny-looking little legs on them birds, about a half dozen on the whole beach, and they got that all shut down. To me, this is far more important than those piping clovers. I can tell you that. That piping clovers is a joke.
They weren't, I don't think they're involved in this legislation,
well,
but that's
no,
interesting.
No, but I'm giving that as an example. Understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
George, I think this is exactly what they're proposing.
No, I'm just concerned about the when you have public waters like that, and the county and state and federal government has invested a lot of money. I think leasing and stuff like that is good, but there also ought to be concern of where they're located and the impact it would have on.
I'm not saying I'm against what you said. I'm just saying that those dear little birds are so important.
Forget the birds. We're not even talking about the birds.
And have no economic development.
Where
do you think this bill is going to go?
I don't know, Sam. You're on the beach.
This bill will go.
Well, how about the other states that have? Have we looked at that?
The Center for the Inland Bays has analyzed. They really are the parents of this bill.
Mm-hmm.
The Center for the Inland Bay has spent considerable time with their staff and their legal counsel and some comparison from other states in drafting this bill. I'm not saying it's perfect by any means, mm-hmm. but I will say that I know that the Center for the Inland Bays has studied this for at least a year, if not longer. There's even a brochure they've put out about the bill and the economic benefits.
They really
believe talk about the $119 million value that there could be for the state.
Yeah, they think the oysters will help clean the bays. That's what they're talking about.
Absolutely. That's one of the benefits.
That's what they think.
The benefit. One of the benefits they claim is that the shellfish will actually help clean the water while they're growing in the bay.
Who decides where they will go?
There will be a regulatory system set up through DENREC to assign leases for various people who want to run one of these
thinking
businesses.
Thinking about what George had to say, and because
I want to approach it like we do everything else. They ought to have a public hearing. They ought to post it. Like if somebody gets a pier, it's got to get posted, and actually people can comment about it, because if you put certain piers in certain waterways, it blocks access for other people, impacts other users downstream. So you might want to be careful when we just sit back and allow a regulatory agency to lease out a chunk of land, even though it's
without the
public. Under the water. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, then it would restrict any boat traffic or recreation, because we attract a lot of people here. And again, you want to talk about economics, people come here to use the bays and et cetera, and we don't want large areas that maybe were prime recreation areas set aside. You can't get into. So there ought to be a public hearing like they do with other leases and things that they give.
These oyster beds are further out than on the shore, George. They're out as probably 15, 20 feet deep.
You're an expert in aquaculture now,
Absolutely.
Good Lord, I love having you. I'm glad you're here.
Mr. President, there has been public presentations of this, right. And I have attended at least one of these, and I think Mr. Benson has as well. And it seems that they have covered most of these concerns. And if the Center for the Inland Bay is supportive of it, I think it's probably a good thing.
Yep.
Do you know
everything I've seen?
Vance, do you know if there's any kind of posting and public comment applied to this?
That's my concern.
There ought to be in it, like they do with other things that they do in the water, make sure it's put in the paper so people can have an opportunity to comment on it.
Councilman Cole, I was in attendance at one meeting while they were developing this a few months ago, and they were very concerned about waterways for boats. There was a map. There was a map up, and they were showing areas that they knew they could lease and areas they knew they couldn't because of high boat traffic. So there has been some conscience behind this, exactly what you're pointing out. There will be conflict of use. They're trying to manage that.
Okay, there should be, and I'm going to make sure. I'd like to make sure it's in the bill, and I think we ought to. Again, we are big on public comment on what we do, and I think we should have public comment on what they do. It doesn't have anything to do with being opposed to aquaculture. I'm out there clamming all the time.
Well, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, if you want an official direction, I'd make a motion that we direct Mr. Godwin to lobby for a public hearing? Is that what you're
saying? If it's in, I haven't had a chance. We're handed this. I'm just saying. Asking if there, if it's... It,
well, if it's all right there, that's not it's fine, a good right. point, but if not, right. we can support that's the idea saying. That
yes.
we have that.
Yes. We think that's public yep. comment should be Deaver part of the process.
Yeah, I'll second
motion,
that.
Mr. Mm-hmm. Phillips, second Mrs. Deaver, yes. to support... Mm-hmm. The idea that if this bill is passed, that it should be public input before they award any
leases
for aquaculture.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'd be shocked if Thank Sam you. Wouldn't support that. Or Vance.
Any questions on that motion?
Lease, sure. I made the motion.
We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
I would like to make you aware of one more thing that is in draft. This is not a bill that's been introduced yet. You're bound to hear about a fairly large bill coming from DLDOT that addresses traffic impact districts and the planning of such. This bill is in draft form. It's been floated around the House of Representatives looking for a sponsor. And even DLDOT, I spoke with Drew Boyce yesterday about this. Even DLDOT is not comfortable that this bill is really ready to move. So I wanted you to be aware of it. So if you see it from some other source, you'll know that I have my eyes on it. Some of our towns have already seen it and read it. Again, they're reading a draft bill. And also, you should know that this bill is coming from DLDOT, but it's coming due to the fact that they have just received some new authority in the past month or so as it regards to regional planning. So this is a bigger picture that hasn't yet come down to where I can focus on it to give you a clear view is why I haven't brought you a bill yet, because there really isn't a bill introduced yet, but there is one coming. I really don't expect it to get enough traction to get done in this session, but I do expect it to be back in January or February, and it'll be one of DLDOT's primary issues by then, I think. I think they plan on doing some outreach over the down session between July 1st and December 31st, but this is a fairly large, comprehensive planning bill, and it requires impact fees. So just keep your radar antenna up on that one. But it's not there's not a finished bill yet.
Impact fees for roads, that type
yes.
of thing, what you're
mm-hmm.
saying?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And what about the, as far as districts, planning districts, wouldn't that be part of an overall district planning? I mean, we do have some, we really don't have
There's
many.
A regional planning movement afoot in state planning and has been for some years recently. And I believe this is
I think it's in our plan.
I believe that this is
regional
a product
plans.
Of that. Yes, right, regional planning.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any more questions? Of how?
What, 62, was that House Bill 62 or was that Senate bill?
Which one's that? Which one's that?
One you read here earlier. 62.
Which about pertaining to what, sir?
A right to farm something.
63. Constitutional. I believe that's a constitutional amendment to guarantee farmers the right to farm, and I believe that's House Bill 63. Let me double check my list.
Do they currently not have the right to farm?
That's what I'm
They
thinking.
Do. They do. There's been some controversy about the necessity for this bill. We've discussed that earlier. Yes, it's House Bill 63. As a matter of fact, the primary sponsor is Representative Adkins, who had told me about a month ago he intended to strike this bill, but that hasn't happened. As a matter of fact, the bill has moved through committee and is now on the House ready list.
So that gives us the right to farm for a change.
Very good. That's good.
For heaven's sakes.
Next, sir, is your barking dog
I wanted to bring,
ordinance discussion.
I wanted to bring, yes, thank you. I wanted to bring some information to you. There's been some concerns about noisy dogs, barking dogs in the county. And what I provided you with in your package is simply a review of what we've done so far, which was about 7 years ago in February and in May. We discussed the complaints that you've received from various people. I've provided you with your February 14, 06 minutes, where the issue of barking dogs was brought up. And then again, it was discussed May 2nd of the same year, 2006, at much more length. The discussion went on at that time, and we also considered a draft ordinance back then that I've included for you. It's just a one-page ordinance to deal with barking dogs and the nuisance created therein. Then I include also in the package for you a copy of Newcastle County's ordinance that deals with noise. It deals with barking dogs, but it's part of a much larger noise ordinance that covers all sorts of noise, not just barking dogs. And then on behind that, I've included for you a copy of Kent County's ordinance, which addresses the barking dogs as well as some other noise pollutions. Also, we've been joined today by two folks that might help you understand how they actually work these regulations. If we have a complaint in Sussex County, currently we lean on our friends at Kent County SPCA. Major Whipple is in the audience and can come forward and explain to you what he does when our folks call him with a barking dog complaint. Right. And then we also have a friend from Kent County, Miss Leslie Lessons. Leslie Persons is here from Kent County to explain to you how her Office of Inspections and Enforcement deal with barking dogs. So we have some firsthand testimonies that can help you as you filter through this information.
Yeah. The complaints I'm getting are not in towns. They're in the county. And they've called out SPCA a number of times, and SPCA has told them, this is my understanding, has told them there's no ordinance on barking dogs. There's nothing we can do. So that's why I wanted to talk about it.
I understand.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, if you got a dog, he more likely is going to bark.
Sooner or later.
There's two things we either do. We either get muzzles for the dogs, or we can get rid of the dogs. Because I don't know how you'd ever get rid of a barking dog. I guarantee you, if a dog would, when I had a dog come to my place, he guaranteed him he was going to bark. In fact, I'd be a little aggravated if he didn't bark. So I don't know where we're going with this bill. It's almost silliness in a sense of speaking.
Mr. President, at your pleasure, if you'd like, I could have one
please,
of our friends come
have,
forward.
Yes,
Mr.
Yes,
Whipple,
yes.
Major Whipple, would you come forward and explain to us, since Kent County SPCA has our contract for animal control and dog licensing, I thought it might be best to hear from Major Whipple first.
Sure.
Because this gentleman would be the first line of defense for us.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Great.
Fine.
Well, I guess the process now, because there is not a law or ordinance on the books in Sussex County to deal with barking dogs, Newcastle and Kent both have ordinances that gives our officers a way to basically stop out and give a warning to the folks when there is a complaint. Sometimes people don't know their dogs are barking because they're at work, because the dog's outside. They don't know. Once we've addressed that issue, the barking stops. But say this issue does continue on and a neighbor has an issue, they have no recourse and we have no recourse to penalize the person for not taking care of the problem.
Yeah.
It becomes a public nuisance issue, it becomes a quality of life issue. And that's something that does need to be addressed in all facets of it. We go out now, we'll give the people a warning here in Sussex County, and that's all that we can kind of do at this point. If we turn around and try to issue a citation because somebody is continually letting their dogs bark, we have no place to go. In Newcastle County, if a dog barks incessantly for 10 minutes or intermittently for half an hour at a time, that's when they're breaking the law. We do cite people under that. More often than not, it's always the first approach is to educate the person on their dog is barking.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ordinance. Hey, take this as it is. Even if they're not home, we'll leave that on their door saying, hey, read through this. This is something you need to know about. We'll get a call back saying, thanks, I didn't know my dog was barking. It's just one of these things to educate the public on where it is. And
Kent and Newcastle County each have ordinances. Are they very similar? Or are
they are very similar.
They're very similar. And they are effective, you're saying?
In my experience, they have been.
I bet you, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I bet many cases they did not know about the dog barking, and you just had to tell them, and then it went away. Well, you have to have an ordinance.
How often do you get called out on a nuisance dog complaint?
In Sussex, I'm not positive on the numbers, but in Newcastle County, we get barking dog complaints that are specific barking dog complaints, about 230 since January 1st, up until the end of May. So that's quite a few. I mean, up there, it's a little more packed together with people, but I would say in Sussex, the nuisance barking is a lot less comparatively, just because
50,
of,
75?
I would say anywhere around maybe 100 in that general vicinity. And the hard part with that is that because there is no ordinances, we may not be able to respond to it right away.
Are there any towns with ordinances in Sussex County?
In Sussex, I want to say that
Lewis
either Lewis and possibly Rehoboth, and I believe Bridgeville as well.
As that dog continues to bark over half an hour, he's considered a barking dog.
Correct.
Now, do you go out and sit on the property, listen for that dog to see if he's barked a half an hour?
And that's another piece to look at. Officers now will go out and do the 10 minutes. If it goes on longer than that, we may not be able to sit on the house for a half an hour just because of the time that it takes and other response that needs to be taken care of. Within that 10 minutes, if we do hear some barking, we're going to go ahead and post that door and then follow up with the owner.
You can't accept a witness's statement?
We can. That witness would have to testify in court. Uh-huh. Sometimes neighbors don't want to get involved because they're in fear of retaliation or anything like that. When it gets to that level, that's when, you know, we do have to rely on a neighbor or eyewitness to the...
How about if there was an intruder on the property at the time you was there listening for that 10 minutes?
That's actually excluded in the law.
Yeah.
It's what?
That part is taken out of the law where that's permitted that the dog is barking. Even, you know, say you live on a country road somewhere where there's deer that come through consistently. Dog's going to bark at deer. Dogs bark, that's what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But when it starts to get to a quality of life issue and bothering the neighbor, that's when it does need to be addressed. But that, if something is causing that dog to bark, that part is omitted from the law.
And the owner has to prove that?
Correct.
That was something in the yard?
And that's the process.
It's pretty hard to catch an intruder in the yard.
Oh, absolutely. But that's also the process of giving the warnings out front, too.
Hard to hold those deer down, too.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
I would really appreciate if we could take a good look at this.
If it is effective. No, I don't disagree. We ought to circulate some of the Newcastle in Kent County ordinances and look it over and have Todd, maybe if you and the staff look it over and come back with a recommendation whether we should you think it's something we should do here or not.
Have you, Mr. Whipple, have you looked at the Sussex County draft ordinance that was proposed?
I have not.
Half
have
dozen not. Years ago.
Well, we might as well revisit the whole thing and just start over. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
We have a lot of new building
sure
going on.
Where it was taken from parts of Kent and Newcastle counties.
And like I said, it really is a quality of life issue for people to live in.
It is. So, yeah, the one complaining gentleman is on the edge of his community, and the problem is across the road. They're in the county, he's in the town. But even if they close all their windows, they still cannot shut out the noise from the dogs, and the owners have told them that's too bad, you know. So.
Any more questions of the major?
No, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. And next,
if you would like,
sure.
Ms. Perkins is here from
she
Kent
came
County.
Down. Yes, we do.
She has some firsthand experience with enforcement with a code in place.
Sure.
Hi, how's
Hi.
Everybody?
Good morning.
Today? Leslie Persands, Assistant Director of Planning Services, Division Head of Inspection Enforcement for about 15 years. And what I thought I'd do is very briefly go through a recent case, no names, no addresses, and so forth. Give you an idea of what we do. We take complaints from two different venues. We either get emails or phone calls from the state police if they have gone after hours, and there were a number of issues, including barking dogs. We would handle that. Or we take complaints, and most often it's neighbor issues. It's in rural areas that have become more heavily populated. Mm-hmm. We do not have issues with large farms. We don't have issues on roads where there hasn't been a lot of extra development. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem recently in a fairly good sized subdivision, there were a number of issues between neighbors, and so things had progressed to the point that they left their dogs, one party did, out on purpose at night to bark, because these were inside dogs, to irritate the neighbors. Mm-hmm. So the neighbors contacted Levy Court Commissioner, your counterparts, and they called our office. First, we go out and we try and talk with the person. Many people do not know, as you said, about the noise ordinance. We give you a copy of the noise ordinance, and in the warning information, you have 4 days to sort of mull it over, ask us questions, talk with us about it, and so forth. We also make sure that the person who complained knows and has a copy of the noise ordinance. So everybody's playing with the same set of cards. Often, I would say 80% to 90% of the time, that takes care of it. Mm-hmm. In this particular circumstance, the people just decided to leave the dogs out longer. So the state police went. So now we have the state police and our office. And what we do, after the 4 days has gone past, I or my assistant supervisor usually contact you. and say, we are preparing to have a police officer and also a neighbor testify under oath at JP Court that there is a noise violation. Are you really sure that we can't work this out? And almost always they go, I thought about it and I'm done now. But in this particular case, they said, I'm good to go. So we went ahead and we went to the home of those folks, and they had beagles, four of them, and I've had beagles many years, so they do bark. They are not in violation if someone is provoking them. And it can be an animal, it can be a person, it could be a vehicle. And the owner of the animal is not responsible for approving that violation. The person complaining is responsible. So you are innocent well before there's any guilt proven. If we interview a person who's made the complaint and they don't have specific times and dates and a written log that they're going to turn in at that court case, we're not going. You may not just have a war and pull us and the animals into the middle of it. So in this particular case, the police did have a notice of information about the barking dog, and also a neighbor was willing to testify with four different events from, say, 11 p.m. up until about 3 a.m. So although our ordinance is specific, it says 10 minutes constantly or 30 minutes intermittently, I don't agree with going that tight. We usually proceed if it's several hours. It's because the JP judges have a lot of very important things to do, and we need to be to a level of importance. So this was 3 hours that these dogs are locked outside, and they want to go in. So anyway, we issued summons to the owners. We had the person who complained. They signed a statement that they will come to court. And we're the middle person. We present that we talk to both sides. We present that both got copies of the noise ordinance. And we call our witness, and they testify. The person with the dogs testifies. And the court makes a determination. And in this particular case, for a number of reasons, our first level of fining presented to the JP courts is very low. It's a $30 fine. Also court costs, so it's going to end up being your loss of time for probably a couple hours and maybe $100 along those lines. Now you have a very clear idea about what to do. Then the fine structure goes to 100 and it proceeds up. And very rarely do we have to go further. So in that particular case, we took the time, we did everything we could. When there's no satisfaction, it's a nice evening, the windows are up, you can't sleep. Mm-hmm. And it really does get very difficult. We do not have the numbers of noise complaints that Newcastle does.
How many do you have?
We would be less than 50 of all noise complaints in a year, really? And the barking dog issue is maybe 10 to 20. Most of them are settled by myself or our assistant supervisor going and talking with folks, the vast majority. But it's in place so that circumstances like this one particular one could be handled. Since we went to court and the gentleman had to pay the $30 fine, the judge said, I don't want to see you again. You understand clearly what we mean here. The county is lenient. They have been helpful. This is your one shot of $100, including the court costs. So we haven't seen or heard anything else. And I guess what I would say is, for those instances that cannot be settled, you need to have something in writing that can be a paper trail so that you can get some settlement. Because Kent has more and more people moving in into formerly largely rural areas, and now there's a development right in the middle. And so it's not really yes, it's our unincorporated area, but it's more of a subdivision nature. Mm-hmm. And when those folks are unhappy, it's not from somebody a half a mile down the road, it's from somebody else on a 10,000 square foot lot right next to them. Mm-hmm. So it you can't even have it really any peace if it's gotten to that level.
No.
So I'd be glad to answer any questions. Hopefully I didn't take too much of your time.
That rings true.
I'd like to ask your question first.
Yes, sir.
Do you have to take the accuser have to go put his name in the first time, or can you just go tell the owner, so would you please get your dogs quiet?
We accept anonymous complaints.
First time, right?
The first time, okay. Yes. And the only way that we need that person is if after a visit or two from our officers, myself and probably some other folks, we can't get a resolution. If we go to court, and usually I tell you the truth, that other person is so angry by them,
yeah,
that by then that they are well ready. We coach them to keep their temper and be pleasant, because a determination depends sometimes on the testimony approach that you have. Mm-hmm. So only at the end do we have the person.
I was thinking if you did that the first time around, that we're really going to have some bad neighbors. I don't want to start bad relationships.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we don't.
Yeah.
We don't. We're information gatherers. We take everything in. That first visit is low-key, just trying to explain. Mm-hmm. We do everything we can to be a negotiator and an arbitrator. At the end of the process, if you can't comply, we're taking you to court and you're going to lose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm typically getting complaints from places like Plantations and the Pilottown Village, that type of thing, across the road from Pilottown Village. Yeah, so, and we have lots of developments in the pipeline coming up, especially in my district.
Thank you very much for coming down today.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it very much.
Yep, appreciate it. And I have copies if anybody needs anything, if you don't.
If you could leave those with Hal, please, that'd be great. Yes, thank you. Hal, make sure we get them.
Thank you, Leslie.
Anything else, sir?
While you're talking about noise. Now this,
yes, sir.
This might be a little bit towards the dogs. In fact, I think they're worse than dogs. As a vehicle goes by, it's got these boom boxes in there, mile big, and they vibrate my windows. And I get up and wonder if the house is falling down. That's what I really bothers me more sometimes than the barking dog. I don't know. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out. But have you ever had that?
I understand. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Major Whipple not only works for us, but he also represents Newcastle County,
right,
because he does work there. I was not able to get a person from Newcastle County's government to come today. Their schedule wouldn't allow it. But I could have someone come speak with you next week if you wanted that. I thought hearing from Leslie and hearing from Major Whipple.
I think she did a fine job.
If you need
She's
more,
very good. Yeah, yes. Very good.
If you need more information, I'll try my best to supply it for you.
Thank you, sir.
Just copies of those ordinances from those other two counties?
You already have
that.
Yeah, we have those. Yeah.
Have it here.
That's all we need.
Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
And get our constable working.
Well, let's see. We've been talking.